Hello, and welcome to the Artificial Podcast with your host Nick Myers.
Artificial
intelligence, voice recognition,
machine learning,
robotics,
actionable analytics.
It is Nick's goal to help everyone understand how AI and voice technology are reshaping our lives both personally and within organizations. Your glimpse into the growing world of AI and voice first starts now.
Nick Myers.
Nick Myers.
Nick Myers.
Nick Myers.
Welcome to the Artificial Podcast. My name is Nick Myers, and I am here to help break down topics in emerging technology, artificial intelligence, and voice to help everyone understand how these technologies are impacting our lives both personally and within our organizations. The Artificial Podcast is brought to you by Red Fox AI. Red Fox AI helps give brands a voice by leveraging the power of AI and voice assistant technologies like Alexa and Google Assistant. If you or your organization is interested in sponsoring an episode, please send an email to theartificialpodcast@redfox-ai.com. If you like what you hear, please feel free to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. You can also follow The Artificial Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube by searching for The Artificial Podcast. Thank you for listening, and now on to this week's episode. Hey there, artificial podcasters. Welcome back to another episode and another week of the Artificial Podcast. My name is Nick Myers, and this week I am very excited to welcome Mark Tucker to the Artificial Podcast. And definitely, if you are involved in the voice space, I am sure you either have heard of Mark or even probably used some of the various resources that he has published regarding voice app development. And in my book, Mark is one of the best developers in the world today. So I am very excited to be able to welcome him on the show. But before Mark and I start chatting here, let me tell you a bit about Mr. Mark Tucker. So Mark is an Alexa champion and Bixby Premier developer. Currently, Mark is also the senior architect for voice technology at Soar.com. He is a software developer and architect with over 20 years of experience and started his voice tech journey in 2016 when there were only 4,000 skills in the Alexa store, if you can believe that. Mark has worked for two startups creating innovative voice experiences for customers and finds time to create his own Alexa skills and Bixby capsules. Mark is the organizer of the Phoenix Alexa Meetup and the Phoenix chapter of the Ubiquitous Voice Society. He has spoken at conferences that include the Phoenix Mobile and Emerging Tech Expo, the Alexa Conference, Voice Summit, and Project Voice. Mark is also the creator of Speech Markdown, which he released as open source and can be found at speechmarkdown.org. He also enjoys finding ways for nonprofits to benefit from voice assistant technology. Mark, welcome to the Artificial Podcast. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. It's nice to talk with you on the podcast today. And hello, podcast listeners.
I know, right? I know you and I, when we finally got some FaceTime out in Chattanooga at Project Voice back in January, and you were definitely somebody I wanted to connect with outside of the Twitter sphere, just because I feel like as I've been learning more about voice and as we've been building our company, I mean, we've used so many of your resources, so it was amazing to finally get to meet you in person. And of course, I was like, I got to get Mark on the podcast. We can have an awesome chat. So,
yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. It was great talking to you at the conference, and feels like I met a couple of new friends there at Red Fox.
Fantastic. Well, to kick things off here, you know, given your extensive background in software development, what led you to get started in the voice assistant technology space?
Oh, wow. So after decades of doing software, whether it be enterprise or corporate web-based apps, mostly in Microsoft technologies, in 2016, I just stumbled across an article that talked about Alexa. I didn't have one. I didn't know anybody that had one. I didn't even know that it existed. So then I read a little bit more and realized that as a developer, I could develop custom apps called skills in the Alexa ecosystem. And so I dove into that a little bit more. I had some JavaScript experience mostly on from website days, not anything with Node.js or nothing in AWS. But I just dug in and started learning, and found that I really liked it. It kind of uncovered something that I had, I guess, experienced in my childhood somewhat. So yeah. I received my first computer in the early 1980s. It was a Texas Instruments 99 4A. and it had a speech synthesizer on it. So I programmed my first text-to-speech when I was a teenager.
No kidding.
And that was fun and exciting. And then for movies like War Games or Star Trek, movies that I grew up with, or Star Trek The Next Generation on TV, there was this interacting with a computer by voice that was always really exciting. And I didn't realize how excited I was about it until I discovered that I could program it myself. And that, so I just jumped in with both feet and started learning as fast as I could.
That's awesome. I love that you referenced some of those movies. Actually, I think the first time I saw War Games was actually last year. And I can't believe it took me so long to watch that. And I actually didn't even know Matthew Broderick was in it, but you're right. They had an interface with the computer in a voice technology way. And of course you referenced Star Trek, where you, of course, you just talk to the unit on your wrist and get beamed up in different things. So I love that you kind of reflect back on some of the different pieces of pop culture there. But I mean, just the fact that you literally threw yourself into this and have truly become such an amazing developer, I think, in such a short period of time is incredible. So that's a really cool story. Now, what was it like developing for Alexa in the quote unquote early days, I guess, early days in the current era of voice that we're in, circa 2016? What was it like developing?
Back years ago.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of progress. When I jumped into it, there was already the Alexa Skills Kit version 1. And I started using that, and then they came out with version 2, which was breaking changes for that. Along the way, though, I discovered Jovo framework and started using that. The idea was that you could write one code base and have it be available for both Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant. And there were some projects at the startup that I was working at the time that was very attractive. And so just started learning that and did version 1. Upgrade to version 2, and now just recently version 3 of Jovo came out. So, and that's what I've been using primarily for my development.
Yeah, and I've heard, as I've talked to a couple other developers, that they are using Jovo. I know how we kind of design and construct our voice apps at Red Fox. I know Brett, my CTO, he uses Visual Studio's code and then ties that into an AWS database, and we kind of connected to Alexa from there. But maybe just for those that don't know, maybe if you want to quickly dive into what Jovo is and maybe some of the benefits that you see with it as you've been using it to develop your voice apps.
Okay. So at a very simple level, when you're doing a voice app, it's a round trip. There's a request that goes, it routes through the cloud version of Alexa or Google Assistant, and then determines if it's a custom app, it goes ahead and sends this JSON request object to some custom webhook that you're listening on. And then you do whatever processing or handling of that. You could process inputs, and then you come up with some sort of an output, which is usually text-to-speech, formatted in speech synthesis markup language, or SSML. And then that round trips back to the device, routing back through that Alexa or Google service in the cloud, which then turns that text into audio. So in essence, your device is really just an audio browser. It takes in recordings of audio and plays audio in the end. Well, what happens with Jovo is that you can use the same handler hosted in the same cloud, like we use Lambda in AWS quite a bit. And we just have that one handler. And as the JSON request is coming in, it snoops it and figures out, oh, this is a Google request, or this is an Alexa request, or now this is a Bixby request, or whatnot. And so it tries to abstract those requests coming in into more of a common, in a common way, so all your different handlers can be reused, or much of them can be reused. There are certain cases where you're calling into something that's very specific for Alexa, like an in-skill purchase or some API. Well, there's probably some equivalent API or similar thing and other platforms. So there's different parts of the code where it will be running something that's very specific to the platform, and you can get down into the details and say, if it's Alexa, then do this, or if it's Google Assistant, do this. But for the most part, probably for 70% of your command process response coming back, then that's going to be exactly the same. And so you've got that code reuse.
That's really nifty. I can see definitely where that would be a benefit because, you know, I've talked with Brett a bit about some of these different platforms. And I know he's still definitely in the mode of just kind of doing things in separate areas, but I can see where that would be a benefit. So you don't necessarily have to build, you know, relatively the same thing with a couple different variations for, say, Alexa or Google Assistant. And like you said, it can be reused and recycled a bit in Jovo. That's really interesting. Well, I can see why you would definitely like something like that. So for the listeners, if you're just getting started in voice app development, definitely take a look at Jovo from what Mark's saying here. It sounds like a really useful platform. So
I was just going to say, tying into that, and that haven't really talked a lot about speech markdown yet, but the idea of speech markdown is that there is already a format, speech synthesis markup language, SSML, that formats that response that's coming back. And that SSML spec's been out for, you know, decades, and was used in one purpose, and then Voice Assistant went ahead and repurposed it for what they're doing. And it's a good spec. It's, you know, been tested. But what happens is that not each platform develops the full SSML spec, and then sometimes they have different tags. And so the idea of speech markdown is that there is a simpler abstraction above SSML that somebody that's not a developer or a designer, more of a content author, non-technical person, could use this speech markdown to format how the speech is going to be spoken. Like, there's going to be a pause here, or there's going to be emphasis on these two words over here. And if you do that with speech markdown, then it actually, because there's differences across the platforms, and if you were to use Jovo and then the Jovo plugin for speech markdown, what it does is it takes the speech markdown that you're writing all of your text-to-speech in, and right before the response comes back, it says, oh, this is a Google response. I'm going to translate that into the SSML flavor for Google or for Bixby or for Alexa. And so what that does is, if the tag exists for that platform, then it goes ahead and uses it. If it doesn't, it just strips it out. I was doing some stuff recently with the new Jovo 3 functionality with Bixby, and I already had probably five different SSML tags that were being used probably about 30 different times in the text that I had. And those were coming back to Bixby as SSML that it didn't know what to do with. So it was reading off the tags. And I'm like, okay, I don't have Bixby support in speech markdown yet. So I spent the, you know, 3 or 4 hours on one day and went ahead and wrote out a full formatter for Bixby. So now what happens is I went into that project and changed everything into using speech markdown. And now when it hits the Bixby, it just strips out all the tags that it doesn't know about and just returns back text and the audio tag.
Yeah, and that, I'm sure that just from you describing it makes that process 10 times easier, because as we've been using SSML, I mean, you can add almost an infinite number of tags, it seems like, depending on how detailed you want to get. So that's why I think it's really interesting. And I do have something I want to chat with you about when it comes to speech markdown as we move through the conversation here. But the way you've just been able to streamline that to make it simpler and cross-connect between the different platforms without always having to write new SSML tags is huge, especially if you're a designer and a developer. So I think it's really neat that you were able to create that and deploy it, and especially make it open source, which is, I always love when people do that. They're not trying to hide information like that, because the point is to help other people. And as we're all learning and growing in this space, you want multiple different sources of information to be able to reference. So yeah, we'll definitely come back to speech markdown and your work with that. But given you've created, you know, at this point, so many different voice apps, I can only assume, what was the first voice app that you ever built, and how did building that help you become a better voice developer?
So I built it was for a national youth organization, nonprofit, that I just did on my own. I was saying, I'm going to learn this technology anyway, and I might as well do something that will be a real life scenario.
Yeah.
And then it might be able to help people. So I was just able to jump in and learn the technology and got a solution where it was probably 80, 90% of the way there. with something that could be released and went ahead and pitched it to this organization. And depending on who I talked to, they either really liked it or didn't understand voice technology at all. this is back in 2016. And
yeah,
I even got as far as uploading it, having access to their AWS account and putting the Lambda function out there and them showing it at in some meetings and a conference. And then the person that was assigned to work with it just didn't understand it, didn't want to do anything. So it was kind of a bittersweet. I feel like the project was successful and was really excited about it, and it could have impacted millions of youth, but the people in charge didn't understand the technology, and so it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. So how was that? Did that specific project then influence you? Did you take a different approach from some of the future voice apps that you built in terms of maybe how it was presented to people who didn't necessarily understand, or what was kind of the aftermath of that?
Well, that's interesting, because I've having worked in a startup, we work with a lot of companies that they're new to technology. But generally, we try to find those that are interested in, and we pitch what the use case is and help them understand very specific, like, how is that going to impact them as a business, and how is that going to impact their customers or clients or patients or whoever the end user is going to be. And I think we've been very successful in that way. But there's still some side projects that I do on my own. And unless I've got something very compelling to work on, then I usually pick something for a nonprofit, whether it be something that informs people about gun violence or that helps gives out information and hopefully reduces teen suicide rates
or
finds opportunities for people to serve in the community. So there's a vein in me that really, that I go back to, I guess, that I mine for ideas along the social good, not-for-profit area.
Yeah.
So when I have a chance to, just on my own, I do something, and then I usually go and find the people and pitch it to them. And sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. But
that's really neat, though, that you view voice as a social good based technology, when really, as ubiquitous as it can be, I mean, I think that should be the thought of a lot of people. And like you just mentioned, working on something for suicide prevention or different things like that, things that I'm sure as a lot of us who are engrossed in this don't even necessarily think about on a day-to-day in some of those minute ways, how it can really help people. So I really like that you take a focus to helping nonprofits and solving different problems like that, because I think that's going to definitely put it in a context for a lot of people who are struggling in some of these different areas and be like, okay, this is a technology that I have to tell more people about and we have to dive deeper into. So I think that's really cool that you do that. Now, how have the development tools for Alexa and Google Assistant evolved since you first started developing for voice? And what are some of the key things that stand out to you?
So when I started out, there was less open source. I don't know if Jovo was around at the time that I started. I don't know when they first came out. So I would say a tool like Jovo was really big in the space being open source. But there's also various tools, whether it be like Dashbot for analytics or various other companies that do analytics as well. But that's one that I've used quite a bit. Or testing tools. There's a whole suite of testing tools around what John Kelvey's doing with Bespoken Tools. That's very interesting that didn't exist. One of the nice things with doing development on Node.js, then there is this vast library of Node modules that are out there that can do various things that people that are experts in those areas are interested in things. I can take advantage of the fact that they put that out as open source. And so that's one of the things that I think is important too, is even though it's not specific to the voice ecosystem, I think having a platform where you have access to lots of different APIs or code that you can use, I think is really key.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a lot of the developer requests for Amazon and Google both to create some additional features or fix some current things. How responsive have you seen they be to some of these different requests? As I'm sure you've had some in different things in terms of, you know, making some progress with these different platforms and some of the tools available.
I'm sure that we'd get a different answer, I guess, depending on who you talk to. But as a as a developer that is always itching for a problem to be solved,
yeah,
you know, I've got a list out there somewhere on Twitter that's 50 things that I wish the Alexa Genie would grant me right now.
Alexa Genie, I love that.
Whether it be intents having specific context, so I can turn off some language model utterances. In a certain case, so that I can really get high fidelity in what I'm asking for. There's all kind, whether it be things that me as a developer could use, or things that I see that a first party Alexa skill can do, but that third party skills that these custom skills can't do yet, or whether it's just as a user a feature. You know, I'm out there raising awareness for routines can call skills now, as long as it's the last thing in the routine and you can only call one, but you can't deep link into a specific utterance or intent for a skill. So like if I am doing something with sleep sounds, I could start up the sleep sound skill, but I couldn't say I want to play, weather, like thunderstorms.
Right.
And so things like that, that you're like, seriously, they should just be already be done. But there's, I don't have visibility, that deep at all into what's going on behind the scenes at Amazon or what their priorities are and stuff. But I don't know, I guess as a developer, there's a part of me that says, you've got this champion network here and all you have to do is pair one team, just one team that would work directly with the champions. We're experienced. We've got, things that are our pet projects or features that we would like, or things that we see in the community since we're so involved. Just have one team working directly with the champions and implementing any ideas that we come up with that are good ideas. Because I guess I could have a bad idea too. I don't know.
No, but, I think you're onto something there, because, who better to talk to than all of the people they've named as clearly some of the best folks out there working directly with Alexa? Why wouldn't you necessarily want to pair somebody up? I can only imagine if you got paired up with a development lead on the Alexa team. Oh my gosh, I can only imagine the mind meld that you both would have.
So that's the idea, I guess, that I have. I don't know, the dream that I have at some point is that there is one dedicated Scrum team to the Alexa champions, and we can get through features as quickly as we can. Because I've seen even just this thing I've been doing the last 30, 40 days on trying to get routines out. The standard course of action is to say, I'm going to go out to the user voice site for Alexa and submit create an account and log in, and then create a feature that I want, and then upvote it, and then just hope other people upvote it too, right?
Yeah.
So I've looked at a number of different things, and just tracking that one project, we were able to go where we weren't even. I think somebody else has actually had created this request, and it was like at 40 different votes, and in the series of 30 days, we were able to get it up to over 100 and into the top 20. And trending as number two hottest feature request. But I've seen things out there that's been out there for years. So it's hard for me to get excited that there's actually being a lot of action taken on that user voice site.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of with you. I mean, I'm sure they can only handle so many requests at a certain time. And I know their team is, from what I understand, is still primarily focused on just constantly making updates and enhancements to the platform overall. So maybe it'll get better. But as long as I think people keep putting suggestions out there and then doing what you said, upvoting it and putting it front and center, hopefully they'll keep their eye on that a bit more. So I know we kind of already talked about speech markdown a bit, but maybe if you want to dive a bit deeper into why you decided to develop speech markdown and how you think making that open source has benefited the voice first community and voice app developers overall.
Okay. So once again, really quickly, similar to how on a website you can make text bold or underscore or other things to change the format and make it look better than just plain text, there's a similar concept in voice where you can do speech marking or speech formatting, where you can emphasize text or
so you would equate like stuff. You'd equate like SSML to CSS then.
Either CSS or more, I would think more like HTML.
Okay.
In the fact that it has the same XML, based tagging, where there's an open tag, closed tag, and there's attributes. So it's very, to a web developer who does HTML, SSML will seem very HTML-like.
Gotcha.
To them. And so there are, designers and developers that code in HTML, and there's nothing wrong with HTML. It works. It's the underpinnings of the whole web, right? But there are people, let's talk about like bloggers or other people that are writing content. They're primarily concerned about the content, not the whole infrastructure of the site. They want to add a blog post and write some text and then format it. And there's some sort of WYSIWYG editor that they can do, or in some cases, more and more, you can see that they're using what's called Markdown. It's just a simplified syntax, instead of bold, you can just do an asterisk on each side of text, and then that when that's formatted for display, then it shows it as bold. So taking that similar concept, thinking that there are, yes, developers and designers that are writing voice formatting, but there's also going to be increasingly more and more people that are not technical, that are the content authors, that need to format speech so that it sounds good, and in some cases that it pronounces words correctly.
Yeah.
We've run into that. As that they're going to want to have control over that. And so I guess the first thing that I was wanting to tackle was, SSML is scary. Let's make it less scary by doing something simpler with Markdown, and speech specific Markdown. So that's one way that I wanted to tackle it. The second point that I was thinking about was, I was on a project where it was primarily a lot of content that was changing rapidly, and it was for a university, and they'd go into a meeting in the morning, because this project had a short, like 2-week turnaround.
Yeah.
And they'd go into a meeting in the morning, and they would agree on what they thought the text was going to be. It would come back as a developer. They would have to go in and change it in code, or go into the database and update a record in the database with that content. And then by the end of the day or by the next day, then there were some more changes, and then trying to keep track of like the version history of that, or any of that stuff. But every time that you have a developer touch that content, whether it be to hard code it in the code or separate it into a separate JSON that then is included in the code or that's in a database record, that costs a lot of money. A developer time is very expensive. And so what we ended up doing for this university was finding a headless content management system where we created a structure. I don't know if we want to go into whole headless CMS, but the idea is like WordPress is a content management system, but its output is primarily the web. That's what it was built for. A headless CMS is built from the ground up with the idea that the consumer, there could be a web interface to add content to this content management system, but the primary user are going to be APIs, which then you can plug into whatever system that you want to get the content back out, whether that be a web page, or in our case was voice. And so created a structure in a CMS where they could go in and change that content. And then it was immediately read in to Alexa and used for the different responses. And so it was very powerful. We saw how easy it was to make changes. They could be in the meeting and they could make the changes right there in the meeting and then talk to the device and see if the changes worked as they thought. And then it was very, very powerful. And so with that in mind, this idea that there are going to be other people that are going to create content and they're going to want to do it in a simplified way really was the catalyst behind Speech Markdown, and kind of just this me seeing connections between, okay, this is where we're at today versus where are we going to be in 2 or 5 or 10 years. And how can we solve that problem now? Plus, I was hitting a problem when I was doing cross-platform development for even just for Alexa and Google. There are tags that Google doesn't support. Mm-hmm. And there are tags now that Google added that Alexa doesn't support. And so then it was this whole munge of things. Okay, I've got this text output is going to be for Alexa and this text output. So then I was like repeating output, but just having tags or not having tags. I'm like, there's got to be an easier way.
Yeah.
To do that. And so then that's when I came up with this idea of, well, let's write it in a speech markdown, which would be simplified. It would get changed into an intermediate format, you know, regardless. So that speech markdown would go into that. And then there'd be a specific formatters, whether it could format that intermediate format into Alexa or Google Assistant or now Bixby. With the idea being, if the tag's supported, it just goes straight through. If the tag's not supported, it ignores it and just removes it from the output. Or in some cases, there could be a smart equivalent, like Alexa has the whisper tag. So, but Google doesn't. But you could change the volume level softly and slow down the rate a little bit during that time.
Yeah.
Kind of simulate it. So, but generally the idea is if the tag's there, use it. If there's a smart equivalent, use that. If there's not, ignore the tag.
Wow. And you built all that. That's incredible. And it's open source, of course, too, right? So anybody can use this.
Yeah, I really felt that this wasn't something that I wanted to hoard. I didn't see any sense in hoarding it for myself.
Yeah.
It was something that, in a way, it was a thank you to the voice community. I, you know, at that time, I'd already been selected as Alexa champion, just had lots of different opportunities.
Right.
And I could just see how this would grow the ecosystem. I'm very much a abundance mindset type of person, that the pie will grow, and if the whole pie grows, my piece gets bigger, and so does yours. And I just wanted to give back to the community, and that's actually paid off really well. You know, there was hundreds of hours of effort, and you know,
oh yeah,
definitely time of self-doubt and all kinds of things involved in the challenge of getting speech markdown out there, you know, second guessing my ideas, and at least one round of, a complete reformatting of the structure and
wow,
and stuff before I got it out. But since it's been out, the people I've talked to have been really positive. Some people like immediately get it. Some people like, oh, we aren't doing anything with formatting yet. And I'm like, well, when you do, just remember.
You have speech markdown.
I'll just let you know. I'll save you a bunch of headache and hours if you want to do that. But I've had other people. So I've had one Alexa champion write a Chrome plugin for the Alexa developer console. So right there in the console, you could write speech markdown
wow.
and convert it to SSML and then go ahead and you could test that out. Or then somebody else wrote the same thing for Google Assistant. And I've had people jump in and help get speech markdown to a version one level. There's still more tags and things that we want to do. It's usable where it's at. I always like to, you know, push. There's other things I would like to get into it. But people jumped in to help out with that. I've seen people write, and this is, there's a plugin and a project available on NPM for Node, but somebody else jumped in for another language and did something. I've
wow.
got, somebody
so you
else
built a community at, then of people
yeah,
helping with this.
Somebody else I met at a conference wanted to have a plugin or an extension for Visual Studio Code so that it would do highlighting, whether the speech markdown was in a JSON file or your JavaScript. Or
you know,
whatnot.
Mark, Brett doesn't already know about this, which I would be kind of shocked if he doesn't. I got to let him know because he does all of our coding in Visual Studio's code. And I know one a pain for him is the SSML part of that. So,
yeah.
Huh. All right. After I get off this recording here, I'm going to go tell him, like, have you seen speech markdown?
Yeah, so I've just had lots of different people jump in. Somebody else has offered to make improvements to the documentation. I'm like, oh, please do. So if there's anybody that's on this call that, one, don't understand speech markdown or see a need for it, go to speechmarkdown.org. There's a whole website, and then it points to, there's a organization out on GitHub that's, you know, got at least 5 or 6 projects there that you can dive into. Feel free to hit me up with questions. I'd love to answer them and get you started, or if you're inclined to give back to the voice community and do open source stuff, and you see a need on a project, jump in and do a pull request or ask how you can help out. I'd sure love to help.
Absolutely. And what I'll do too is when I publish the episode and I have the episode notes, I'll make sure to include a link to Speech Markdown as well, so you can get quick access to check that out and take a look at it at least. And like Mark said, just feel free to reach out to him. And if there's any ideas you have or you want to be a part of it, he definitely is the person to go to, because this is a really incredible thing that he was able to develop to really help people when it comes to developing their voice app. So that's really cool, Mark. I did not know the whole story behind that, and I'm happy you shared it, because it's like, wow, I'm just wrapping my head around just how much time and effort it took you to do that. And then you made it open source, which I'm going to be honest, you probably very easily could have monetized this, but you gave it back as a gift, which is just incredible.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact date, but we're coming up on the first birthday of Speech Markdown being released.
Wow, congratulations. That's huge. So very cool. So now as maybe we switch gears a bit, given again your wide array of experience developing voice apps, and of course now talking about Speech Markdown, what are some tips, tactics, and strategies that you can offer for someone who may be listening wanting to develop for voice with no real prior experience?
All right. Well, one is don't be afraid to learn new things. The company that I work for, SOAR, we try to help people focus on what their strengths are. And just to give you an idea, I could probably tell you very specifically my top five strengths and how they related to Speech Markdown, but it would be also relating to why I was able to jump in with both feet when voice came out and learn new things. So these are my top five strengths, and see if anything pops out of why this might be, voice might be the thing for me. Number one strength is learner. I love to learn new things, whether it be, you know, learning everything I needed to know about voice technology when it very first came out. Harmony, I like the idea of community, the whole open source idea with Harmony, that fits in. My third strength is connectedness. I see how things could be connected, not only people, people and systems, but ideas. This HTML and Markdown is like SSML and Speech Markdown, or these different connections. And then my last two are analytical and deliberative. So I would say a lot of programmers probably have some of those, the ability that they like to learn, or they're analytical on different things. But my encouragement is just get in and learn. If you don't know it, then learn it. I knew JavaScript, but I didn't really know anything about Node.js. So I got in there and I learned Node.js. I had done lots of stuff on Microsoft Stack. I hadn't done anything on AWS Cloud. I learned how to do Lambda. I learned how to do IAM. I learned how to do DynamoDB. I learned how to do Secrets Manager. I learned how to do...
Yeah.
API Gateway, CloudFront, CloudWatch, Step Functions, the things, the list of things that I've learned over the last 4 years when I started voice is just mind blowing. And then I'm writing a game right now, and I need a mobile friendly website. So I'm learning Vue.js with Nuxt and hosted on Heroku, and I just got to learn things. Just so don't be afraid, get in. Of all the communities that I've been involved with over the years, technical communities, the voice community is really friendly.
I would agree.
And we're willing to help. There's open source projects to get you started. If you haven't picked a framework to start with, I'd really just encourage you to start with Jovo. There's just so many advantages to using it. That's a great one to learn. And lots of ways the plugins or extensions and things that they have as part of the Jovo framework will make things so much easier for you. So that's where I would say is don't be afraid to learn, jump in and learn it. Don't be afraid to ask questions, get involved.
Absolutely. I think every single point you just outlined there, I think is really comprehensive and really a good voice developer, because again, with this being such an emerging an uncharted space, I think you need an aspect of every single one of those elements, because I'd imagine for you too, it's been a lot of A/B testing, it's been a lot of failing, and then picking yourself right back up and trying something again. So having, that learner aspect, having The tenacity to keep learning and ask questions and connect with other people, I think are amazing tips. And if you're someone listening who is really interested in getting started with voice development, definitely do not take Mark's comments and tips there with a grain of salt. Actually act on them, and I'm sure you'll see the results. So, I think those are fantastic. So maybe as we start to wind down our conversation here, I do want to get your thoughts quick on if you think voice assistant tech will always be dominated by Amazon, Google, and Samsung, or do you think other third-party platforms will enter the market that are either as good or better than the big three currently?
Ooh, that's a big question.
Yeah.
I think at least in the short run and probably at least in the middle as well, those three are going to play a huge role. There's they've already spent lots and lots of,
a lot of money
and developer time and experience learning the platform, learning how to do this, getting devices into the hands of users. So, that's going to be hard to overcome. We talk a lot about Alexa and Google and Samsung with their Bixby is relatively new, and they had a stumble with the first version of Bixby, I think. And then now with the newer version of Bixby based on Viv and all this stuff that they've come out, the fact that they've got so many devices,
yes,
whether it
devices.
Be phones or watches or TVs, they're just huge vendor. And
fridges, TVs, ovens, they do huge, everything, it seems like nowadays.
Then just because they started late does not mean that they're not going to catch up. So I think there's going to be some platforms that can do that. There's been some talk in the news about, is Facebook going to have
their own voice assistant
or Spotify? And I could see that there could be. I could see a world where you have multiple devices. So whether will you have multiple smart speaker devices? Maybe not. But there could be one for your car. There could be one for your office. And there's got to be at some point some way to have this pool of information about you that's transient and in the cloud that any voice platform could use, so that these things are really convenient. And the use cases I think have to improve too. I think voice assistance is going to be so much more than a smart speaker. Like I equated it earlier that the smart speaker is basically like a voice browser. Records audio and plays back audio and does some cloud stuff in between, right? But there's going to be so much more that needs to happen with IoT sensors or things that are happening behind the scenes. I think this is, Star Trek again, being fiction, but they're working on something and they ask the computer to do some analysis on something and some problem solving and then
and it
comes
just
back
it.
With the response. And so it's really becoming the expert. So here's a scenario that I look forward to, I guess, in the future. So let's say that I am driving in my car and I'm not a mechanic and I don't know a lot about, what's happening with cars. I take it in for periodic maintenance, on schedule, and I pay the mechanic sometimes $50 and sometimes $500, right? Depending on how old my car is. I tend to keep the cars for a long time. But what if I was driving and I'm like, and say, hey, Chester, give me a summary. So like Chester, let's say that's the nickname I gave my car.
Love right? it.
And so over like months of me owning this car, or maybe even a previous owner, if I bought the car, there's sensor readings about the car, event logs, things like when it was taken in for repair or maintenance, or what parts were replaced, or how long parts last for. All coming together in some sort of a report where it could tell me what the gas mileage is, what the trending of the gas mileage or some other performance indicator. Oh, we're trending downward on this thing. My next tire rotation's due within, the next couple of weeks or, 200 miles or some other action item. Or I can say, hey, I heard a noise. My car's making a funny noise. When did that start? Or even the car could say, hey, did you know that yesterday your car started making a noise that was a little bit different than it had been?
So useful.
It could be such and such. It could really be useful. It's just doing this stuff that's going to make my life so much easier. And it's going to be my expert. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, that sounds pretty bad. Let's go ahead and get that scheduled. And then it would schedule with Mike Garrod. Hey, it would set up an appointment with Ted. He's my mechanic, and he can go get things set up and things fixed and pass off that information to him so he can, you know, get going on that. And so we're not there yet, but that's, I guess that's where I start seeing these things becoming very useful. And whether that's something that's being done with custom voice apps on Alexa platform or a specific voice assistant for my, that's car specific, that's doing all that stuff. Well, it doesn't matter that much to me as long as I can interact with them and not have it be so weird that it's stupid about this over here. You know, as long as I can tie into the things that I need to.
Well, I really like that example because I don't think that is insanely far-fetched. I mean, if you think about, you know, you look over the last 30, 40 years of what we've been able to do with technology, I mean, I'm sure there's so many different points where, that'll never become a reality. We'll never be walking around with this touchscreen in our pocket that can give us information on demand. And here we are, right? We're now over 10 years into the iPhone and smartphones as we know it. So I don't think that's entirely far-fetched. And I think you're spot on where we're going to see more integration with different pieces of emerging technology. You know, definitely AI and conversational AI getting better and being connected to various IoT devices and different things. I mean, this is just the ground floor. So I don't think your crazy future idea there is far-fetched at all. I actually wouldn't be surprised even within the next 10, 15 years, we actually see something like that come to market personally. So, but as we kind of now wrap up the conversation, Mark, I always like to ask every guest I bring on the show this question because I just love to get their different perspectives. What is one thing that you think someone can do today to begin leveraging voice assistant technology, either personally or within their organization?
Oh, one thing I've been thinking of quite a bit on the business side of things is that employee onboarding or company culture or even learning the alphabet soup that goes with each corporate. I've done startup, I've done corporate, I've done consulting. So, you know, over my decades of software development, I've been in lots of different environments, but specifically in the, you know, company culture, corporate, there's a number of things that you can do to help onboard or integrate more quickly new employees into what your company culture is and get them excited about the company or learning its values. That having that type of stuff that's available would really help somebody that's new to a company feel more at ease and like they belong. So you could, you know, be listening in your car on the way into to work and you know, be listening to the, the latest voice newsletter about what's going on in the company, or you know, a message directly from the CEO that he or she probably would record overnight, and that you could get what her thoughts were right on the direction of the company. So I think that's going to be big, and that's something that you can do today.
Absolutely, and I think we're going to start seeing more of that, especially now. Or I think with everything happening, you know, across the world with this new virus, that companies are finally being pushed to test the technological boundaries of, wow, can employees actually work from home and we can still run our company with a distributed workforce? Or, oh, well, maybe look at this other piece of technology that can actually help us continue functioning if we don't have everybody in the office. And how can we give more resources via some of these different platforms? So, I think that is an excellent thought on what people can start doing today, because you're right, it is available now. And I think we're just going to be accustomed to more and more on the go information, because we're always looking to do things more efficiently, right? And that's exactly what this technology allows us to do. So I think that's an excellent closing thought. But Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure, I mean, to chat with you in this episode. I learned so much. I'm so happy we got to dive into speech markdown, and of course you sharing your thoughts on some of the different projects you've worked on, and just your breadth of experience in this industry is just amazing. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. And if anybody wanted to,
fun.
Fantastic. I've had such a great time. And if anybody wanted to reach out to you or get in touch with you, what are some of the best ways for them to go about doing so?
Probably the two best ways to contact me would be on Twitter. Mark Tucker is my handle there on Twitter, or on LinkedIn. And I'm on one of those pretty much every day. So you can follow me just to get information, or DM me there, or send me a message on LinkedIn and I'll get back to you.
Fantastic. Yeah. And definitely you don't have to go far on the Twitter sphere to find all the Voice people. And Mark is definitely one of those folks. I remember when I first started following the Voice First hashtagging and getting involved with it, Mark was always active and helping people and sharing ideas and thoughts. So you don't have to go far to find him, especially on Twitter. But thank you so much again, Mark, for taking the time to chat with me and sharing all of your expertise with the listeners here. And I'm really excited to keep in touch and continue collaborating with you. It's an exciting time we're in. So
yeah, no, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity and wish you all the success with your new endeavor, your Voice projects. And
thank you.
Really excited for getting to know more of your podcast listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we'll chat soon.
All right. Thank you very much, Nick.
Artificial intelligence, voice recognition,
machine learning,
robot.
You've been listening to the Artificial Podcast with your host, Nick Myers.
Nick Myers.
To stay up to date with all our latest episodes, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. To learn more about how your organization can benefit by unlocking the power of AI and voice, visit www.redfox-ai.com. Until next time.